And welcome to the Generations Broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, your host. Homeschool father of five, raising our kids, pretty much raised them out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado. Now, on to the grandchildren, a fourth on the way, by the way.
Congratulations.
And Adam McManus with me on this edition of the program. He is the host of TheWorldView.com.
And raising and homeschooling three children here in South Texas on the first floor. You're in the basement, I'm on the first floor. We don't have basements here in Texas.
All right. Well, today I want to come back to the liberal agenda. That is the progressive agenda, better known as the regressive agenda. In the fall of Western civilization, this is the advancement of this regressive agenda, both nationally and in various states around the country.
It's bad. California now becoming the first state to say large department stores must display products like toys and toothbrushes in gender-neutral ways. I mean, as if this is just earth-shattering, important stuff to legislate about. Now this.
It's incredible what's going on. They've worked on this legislation for a while. Of course, this is the institutionalized, the transgender or gender confusion. It's the gender blender, mass-produced across a state, the largest state, I believe, population-wise in the country. The state of California now bringing in this bill that would just pressure stores to not present a girls' department and a boys' department when it comes to things like toys. And so, you know, the baby dolls are going to be sold right next to, I guess, the trucks, the little toy trucks, and they're going to blend the whole thing. And the idea, of course, is to somehow educate an entire state, if not entire nation, into the transgender ideology, because this is an ideology. This has been pushed by Assemblyman Evan Lowe, a Democrat from San Jose, who has done this several times. I think he is the source of most of the bad legislation relating to the homosexual agenda in the state of California.
He has introduced this particular bill two other times where it failed, in 2019 and 2020. The bill, to be clear, says that in a large store, they must have a gender-neutral section to display a reasonable selection of items that are not necessarily traditionally marketed to boys or girls. Does not include clothes. The law only applies to toys and childcare items, including hygiene and teething products. It applies only to stores with at least 500 employees, meaning small businesses are exempt. But Evan Lowe is a self-professed homosexual. He has introduced bans in the past, as of 2016, on all California state-funded travel to any state that enacted a law that was concerned, for example, about sexual explicitness related to homosexuality in the curriculum, or, for example, affirms religious liberty and the right for people to choose what photographer or florist they use in their wedding. Evan Lowe, interestingly, according to a New York Magazine article, has aspirations to run for president in 2024. I know most of our listeners have probably never even heard his name, but like Barack Obama, he has, along with nine other young Democrats, they've said he's only 38, has unusual ambition. He's very pleased with Governor Gavin Newsom for signing this bill into law, and they continue to regress until the entire state just falls into the Pacific Ocean.
Well, Evan Lowe, I think, is an example of the bleeding edge of the destruction of a state, a nation, and a civilization. He's on the bleeding edge, but that's not to say that others won't be there with him within the next 5 to 10 years. And it appears that the state of California has adopted his agenda hook, line, and sinker. What message does this send to 10 million children in the state of California? It's the gender-neutral vision, the idea of destroying the idea of gender. God made man male and female. Okay, that's pretty basic. That's Genesis 2 stuff. If you're cutting out Genesis 1, Genesis 2, you're obliterating creation and obliterating any gender differences. Friends, you are, in the ultimate sense, setting yourself against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us break his bands asunder and cast away his cords from us. Of course, he that sits in the heavens shall laugh. The Lord shall have them in derision. But whatever the case is, they have set themselves to destroy a civilization, the whole idea of gender. They're destroying everything they can possibly destroy. They're destroying the heritage of the entire Western world. We've talked about that already. They're destroying gender. They're, I guess, planning to destroy human language in the year 2025. After that, they'll destroy all sexuality and create asexual reproduction for humans by the year 2035. I don't think I'm kidding here. I think this is the agenda. This is where they're headed. But friends, this is what the end of a civilization looks like. This is what a civilization looks like when it's given way to a totally nihilistic, suicidal view of human existence. That's what this is. This is called suicide.
It is scary.
But the sad thing is they're drawing kids into it.
One of our friends just pulled their children out of a more traditional school to homeschool them. One of the reasons was because of the crazy gender blender politics that has made its way into the classroom and into the curriculum. It's confusing. It creates all kinds of angst, emotional angst, in any child because their authority at school is telling them something that in their heart and in their spirit they know is terribly wrong and certainly violates everything they've been taught at home or in reading the Bible.
Yeah, and I'm thankful that there are parents who want to get off the merry-go-round and save their children from the demise of a society, the demise of a civilization. My guess is there are people who think I overstate the case, that Swanson's using hyperbole again. Well, there he goes, using hyperbole. But friends, I think if you read history, you're going to find this is what the end of a civilization looks like. This is why I recommend my book, Preparing the World for Jesus. Okay, it's the companion to Taking the World for Jesus, but you really need to get a copy of Preparing the World for Jesus. It's one of the most important books you could read. Why? Because I think you'll get the message, in example after example, of empire after empire that comes down. Why? For the same reasons that our empire and our civilization is dying out even now. Get a copy of Preparing the World for Jesus at generations.org. It's a great read aloud for the entire family. It's really our world history course, but it's a read aloud. It's interesting. It's some of the most interesting stuff you'll ever read in terms of history. But I'd encourage you to the BC account of world history in Preparing the World for Jesus at generations.org. We're going to talk a little bit about Time Magazine's most influential people of the year and another indication that this thing is coming down. These people are no names, my friends. They're just no names. Be back with more in just a moment on the Generations broadcast.
What happens when a culture that was established and guided by biblical principles abandons the faith and seeks to live by its own wisdom? In his latest groundbreaking work, Epic, The Rise and Fall of the West, Kevin Swanson unfolds the dramatic history of Western civilization, highlighting the phenomenal impact that Jesus Christ and his people have had upon the thought, culture, and institutions of the Christian West, as well as tracing the slow but devastating decline of Western civilization and the key factors that have led to our spectacular fall over the centuries. A sobering narrative of gospel hope, this book urges its reader to greater fervency in the work of discipleship and the development of an international vision for the church. This is truly a must-read for any Christian seeking to understand the times and seasons in which we live. You can claim your hardcover copy of Epic, The Rise and Fall of the West by visiting generations.org/store today. That's generations.org/store.
And we're back on the Generations broadcast. Kevin Swanson with you, also Adam McManus with me on this edition. And Time Magazine has just released their most influential People of the Year edition, just came out. And I'm looking at the covers, I'm thinking, who are these people? What are these? They're the heroes of the day. More destructive than constructive, and that's to be expected. But the thing that shocked me is they're pretty much nobodies in a world going down. Now, some of the names are known, But what are they doing? What have they done? How important are these people? Not really that important. To those who want to see the destruction of Western civilization and those who want to see some kind of construction to Western civilization, either way, these guys are pretty much non-factors in the world today. That's my take on it, Adam. Celebrities, political leaders showcased on the covers included Prince Harry and Meghan, gymnast Simone Biles, actor Kate Winslet, singer-songwriter Billie Eilish, director general of the World Trade Organization, somebody, and CEO NVIDIA, Jensen Huang, some writer named Kathy Park Hong. That's pretty much it. Now, as you mentioned, you said you don't think this has as much to do with influence as just, you know, you take in somebody from various cultural / ethnic backgrounds, mixing them all together and throwing them on the cover of Time magazine.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got gymnast Simone Biles. She's African-American. Of course, just went to the Olympics and kind of had a, to put it nicely, a misstep. Some people thought it was about protecting her mental health, but she decided not to compete in some of the key moments in the Olympics. Actor Kate Winslet, known initially for her role in Titanic. She's been in a score of movies. She's been married 3 times and has become a big advocate for the homosexual cause. She's denounced homophobia in Hollywood and says, well, I know 4 actors who are hiding their sexuality, meaning that they are homosexual, but they won't reveal that. So I guess she's influential in terms of encouraging people to embrace the world of sexual perversion.
Yeah, and then you got Billie Eilish. She's on the list, and you know, we've commented on her already. She's sort of the green-haired, despondent, post-civilization nihilist, popular singer of the day. And the Song of the Year Grammy in 2020 was awarded to Billie Eilish. It was a mentally disturbed tribute to sadomasochism. Sadly, the Song of the Year. When we pointed out, that's quite a distinction from the Battle of New Orleans, Song of the Year in 1959.
What a contrast. You know?
I mean, just, oh, man. So, yeah, Song of the Year Grammy in 2020 went to Billie Eilish's Bad Guy. Her album was dedicated to the themes of hopelessness, suicide, self-mutilation, Lucifer, and cannibalism. So, yeah, just another beautiful presentation from a civilization has-been.
She hasn't fallen far from where she started. She and her brother Phineas were homeschooled. I don't know whether that was for Christian reasons. Her parents said they chose to homeschool them so they could have greater freedom to explore whatever was interesting to them in the world of art or dancing or acting or music. She was writing songs early on and wrote her first real song at the age of 11 in her mother's songwriting class. The song, interestingly, in her home school, is about the zombie apocalypse, inspired by the television series The Walking Dead, from which Billie Eilish took script lines and episode titles that she added to the song as part of the assignment.
She looks like she's played a part in the zombie apocalypse herself,
yeah.
Adam.
She's just embraced the whole world.
I mean, you talk about despondent, you talk about somebody who's embraced the nihilistic vision, hook, line, and sinker. That's what's happened to her. The 2020 Grammys lavished the green-haired, despondent, apparently suicidal Billie Eilish with 5 awards. However, viewership had dropped in half over 8 years. And no wonder Billie's big album sold 343,000 copies in 2019 compared to Michael Jackson's Thriller album in the 1980s that sold 65 million copies in the 1980s. So the differences between the modern pop stars, the has-beens of the present day, and the big pop singing times of the 1970s, 1980s is really pronounced. But as you mentioned, Simone Biles as well in the list of the most influential people, again, not influential, as far as I'm concerned, just not influential. I mean, what in the world is influential about this woman who proclaimed herself to be the greatest of all time, by the way? She had her leotards with the goat symbol outlined in sequins on her, but then eventually backed out of the Olympics when push came to shove. So that's Simone Biles. And then also on the list, NVIDIA's Jensen Huang, who is the CEO of this organization busy making gaming consoles for the rising gaming market in the U.S. and around the world. And I'm not exactly sure what that's going to do for the benefit of mankind. So in terms of being influential, I guess, you know, Jensen Huang from Taiwan is making the gaming consoles. So he gets to be on the cover of Time magazine. Also, Prince Harry and Meghan, of course, I guess we would have expected Time magazine to get behind that. Markle, an outspoken feminist, she was also a supporter of the 2018 approval of abortion in Ireland, something that the English monarchy was hesitant to do. The English monarchy has always held off on supporting abortion, but Meghan Markle, of course, on the outset, out there doing her best to support those things that are abominable to God. So, again, not sure exactly why these guys are the heroes to the cause of humanity. I'm not sure.
Now they're pulling away from the royal family, kind of doing their own thing.
Yeah.
I think they're interested in the entertainment world, perhaps putting out a television program. I haven't followed it very carefully, but there's two other people on the list. Kathy Park Hong, she's a Korean-American poet, and she's absolutely kind of a one-note Johnny on the racial card and critical race theory. I looked up one particular essay she's known for. It's entitled Delusions of Whiteness in the Avant-Garde.
Yeah.
She presents herself in the world of intersectionality. She has multiple points. She is Korean-American. She's a woman. And so she's got two victim points there in the world of American Marxism of today. She also is quite liberal with the F word in this essay, and yet, you know, obviously has a very keen intellect in the way she can formulate sentences, and she's got a strong vocabulary, but she's ultimately, if influencing anybody, she's again pulling them toward hell, not heaven.
All right, well, I don't want to go over too much more of this list, but the point that I want to make is that these guys are nobodies. I mean, they're not doing anything. These are the pirates that didn't do anything. I think, if anything, this magazine is communicating the message clearly that the future of a civilization is hopeless. It's not going anywhere. These people aren't influential. They never have been. They never will be. Now, the most influential people in terms of destroying the world right now in the negative sense, okay, if you want to go to the negative side of things, and it's true, I think, you know, these folks are probably doing stuff on the negative side of things. They're advocating the critical race theory, intersectionality, LGBT. That, you know, they're the advocates of those things that are not going to construct a civilization, but will destroy a civilization. So we get that. But the most influential people, if you really wanted the list, what would it be? Who would be on the front cover? Well, it'd be Joe Biden, the president of the most influential country in the world still, at least for the next 2 years. Fauci would be on the list. Wouldn't you say Fauci has had some influence upon the world, say, in the last
slightly
year?
Yeah. Put on your mask. Don't put on your mask. Get the shot. Get three shots.
Yeah. I would say if there's been a person who's influenced national governments to turn into tyrannies, it would be Fauci more than anybody else.
It's almost as if everything that comes out of Fauci's mouth is in the red letter edition, as if Jesus himself said it.
So, friends, if you want to know who's influential in the present day to the negative side, it would probably be the president of the United States. It's turned the world towards a pro-abortion stance, and just about every progressive / regressive position that you could imagine. Fauci as well. The Wuhan lab, I would put on the list as being influential. Now, I don't know who is involved in the lab, but I would say the Wuhan lab is up there on the list. Mark Zuckerberg and the mass production of the de-relationalized form of communication through popular media, I'd say he's on the list. George Soros, probably the most active political influencer on the side of the left in the world today, with maybe the exception of Bill Gates, but definitively pro-abortion, anti-freedom, and probably the guy who has persecuted more Christians in the Western world than anybody else, George Soros.
Mm-hmm.
I'd put him on the list. He's influential.
Bill Gates would be on the list.
Oh, yeah. And Warren Buffett. Now, we have talked about Warren Buffett before. He's one of the richest men in the world. I think he's worth about $80 billion. But Warren Buffett, in 1 year, get this, in 2018, he is by far the most influential pro-abortion donor in the world. Nobody is responsible for killing more babies and for the advancement of the killing baby agenda than Warren Buffett. In 1 year in 2018, the story came out in 2020, but in 1 year in 2018, Warren Buffett gave $51 million to Planned Parenthood. And from 2000 to 2018, the Buffett Foundation poured $4 billion into groups to advocate for abortion on demand with almost no attention from the media. That includes $675 million to Planned Parenthood, $441 million to Marie Stopes International, which provides abortion in developing countries, and $112 million to the Guttmacher Institute. Friends, these pro-abortion organizations are 100 times larger than pro-life organizations across America. In fact, I just did a search for, you know, National Right to Life. They're like a 5-6 million a year kind of operation. Compare that to the billions of dollars that pour into Planned Parenthood via the Buffett Foundation, et cetera. And friends, you're talking about these pro-abortion organizations being 100 times larger. They are the Goliath of the present day. And National Right to Life and, you know, Colorado Right to Life and these little tiny Right to Life organizations across America are almost nothing in comparison to the size of these billion-dollar organizations like Planned Parenthood, the Marie Stopes International Organization, the Guttmacher Institute, and on it goes. We're talking about tens of billions of dollars that run these organizations in any given year. I would say probably closer to 1,000 times larger than your largest pro-life organizations in America today. So you're looking at a real Goliath versus David contest when it comes to the pro-life issue. And if you want to know who Goliath is today, who is the major financier to propel the pro-abortion agenda in America across the world today, it would be Warren Buffett. Nobody more evil, nobody more powerful, nobody influencing the pro-abortion movement more so than guys like Warren Buffett and George Soros.
So we've talked a lot about the bad guys, whether they're on the cover of Time magazine or not. Who are the good guys, Kevin?
Well, you know, I mean, there are various scales going on here. I would say the Christian influence in the Western world has been severely, severely minimized or marginalized in just the last 10 years. Queen Elizabeth is on the list of the conservatives. She's still the old guard. What is she, 94 years old? I mean, she's up there. And I do believe she is one of the final conservative holdouts, if not a Christian holdout, in the Western world. So when she's goes, it's over. There's nothing at the highest echelons that will maintain something of the old Christian conservative moral agenda of previous generations. The 1,000 year plus of the Christian moral influence in the Western world is just about over. Now you got Franklin Graham and the Graham legacy, but that's lost significant influence with the uppities in America. It's not as if Joe Biden and Donald Trump are going to have Franklin Graham over for tea anytime too soon. Not like it was with Billy Graham in the 1970s and 80s. That's a difference. Now you've got guys like John MacArthur, who has gained influence in just the last year or two among Christian groups. But there are no C.S. Lewis's or Bonhoeffers or Corrie ten Booms or Jonathan Edwards. In the present day, just a few folks who write biographies about these who have gone before us, but there aren't the C.S. Lewis's today. You don't have the Bonhoeffers. You don't have the Corrie ten Booms.
Well, what about Josh McDowell?
Well, you've got some of the John MacArthur's, Josh McDowell's of the 1970s, 1980s. There's still something of a conservative voice in American evangelicalism. But they're disappearing. You know, what are they? In their 80s. Some of them moving into the 90s. So it doesn't seem to me that we have much of a significant Christian influence upon our culture today. I got some pro-LGBT divorcee women pushing their wares on ChristianBooks.com. It's a pretty pitiful scene, by the way. The bestsellers on ChristianBooks.com, don't go there. It's not worth it. Who are the heroes? I would put the Kendrick brothers on the list. They're doing something. They're influencing. They have a rising influence among the evangelicals, and they have a good message.
Kirk Cameron,
who works with the Kendrick brothers from time to time.
And Ray Comfort.
Ray Comfort, who's a great evangelist and gets around the country. And I would add to that list obscure pastors who keep their churches open despite all the pressures against them by the tyrannical Orwellian state. I mean, not just John MacArthur, but we're talking about Canadian pastors, Australian pastors. We've interviewed some of them on this program. To me, these are the heroes.
Dr. James Dobson is another.
Yeah. He's still in the fight. Let me throw in a few others. Dave Eubank. We've interviewed Dave. The Free Burma Rangers. And not just that ministry, but hundreds of ministries that are helping with distressed Christians around the world today. Suffering saints in Pakistan, Afghanistan, India, China, Nigeria. You know, we don't know their names. And this is the thing about Christian heroes. You typically don't know their names. I think of the book Ecclesiastes speaks of the poor wise men who saved the city. But nobody remembered who he was. So that was, you know, one of the stories that is brought out in that book of wisdom, the book of Ecclesiastes. It's the poor wise men who saves the city. And so many of those pastors that are persecuted for their faith, Christian brothers and sisters that are dragged into courts and they suffer for their faith, but their suffering becomes the fertilizer, the seed for the growth of the church in the next generation. And here's one more thing. Let me add one more thing as we wrap this thing up. Dads and moms who pull their kids out of public schools, those Christians with the faith to stand against the zeitgeist as best as they can with all the faith and the courage that God gives to them against all odds, against everybody else in their lives, against their relatives, against the entire culture, they stand against the flow. They pull their kids out, they insist on a distinctively Christian worldview in their children's education, and yeah, they realize that they're the 1% of the population, but tough bananas, they're going to take that stand. Some won't go into debt for college or for cars, paying off their mortgages in a debted Keynesian society where it's all about debt, where it's all about living beyond your means. We're talking about people who resist Hollywood and social media and the postmodern chaos and that Dionysian emotion fest presented in modern music today. They stand against that. They want to bring in a distinctively biblical worldview into music, into culture, into politics. They teach their children to honor their parents and respect the cultural wisdom of the older generations. They're not raising their daughters to be feminists and independent socialists, dependent upon the state. They're raising their daughters to be oikos despotels, as managers in the home, helpmeets for their husbands, as the Bible lays out that vision. They're standing against the flow, and this is almost impossible to do, friends, I'm telling you. They'll never submit to the constant barrage of nihilistic ethics and LGBT indoctrination. They still call it an abomination, and they stand up on the basis of Old Testament ethics. They relentlessly critique that which contradicts God's revelation, the worldviews of humanism, of existentialism, and naturalistic evolutionary theories, of feminism, critical race theories, and on. They will not compromise an inch on the gospel, but insist on God's laws, the definition of what is sin, and the death of Christ, and the resurrection as saving us from the sin, that bondage, that guilt, and that demonic hold that sin had in our lives. These are the heroes, those that are standing against the zeitgeist, the flow that is as powerful as the Niagara Falls, and they're climbing up the falls, against the falls, painful inch upon painful inch, opposing the zeitgeist at every single point. Are these people influential in the world? Well, maybe not really influential right now, but they're the remnant of faith in a faithless world. They're the remnant of a civilization in a world that is in an unrelenting, self-destructive pattern. Well, friends, these are the heroes, and I don't have their names, but my guess is there are some that are tuning into this program right now. As I wrap this thing up, friends, I just encourage you to give your children the stories of the great heroes, the Christian heroes that have stood against incredible odds throughout the history of the Christian faith. That's why I love these read-aloud stories, Trial and Triumph. We recommend it for 8th grade, but it's great for the entire family. And my very favorite, American Faith, 27 Sketches of American Faith, from John Winthrop to David Wilkerson. I love this as a read-aloud for my family, and I'd recommend it for your family, too. It's called American Faith. I'd encourage you to read these stories of real heroes. If there's ever been a time in which we need to stand up, we need to be the heroes, encourage our kids to be the heroes, and give them the stories of real heroes. That time is now. I'd encourage you to these resources at generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson and Adam McManus, and we invite you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.